So we were all talking about, before the, we got on stage, about this panel and potentially something very important, very serious, smart contracts and banking. And we agreed that when you talk about something this serious, you're supposed to look at the audience like they're naked, so you're not nervous. And we got to say, you've got a great-looking group here. So as any banking panel would start, we have to start with a disclaimer. And no one here is talking on behalf of the banks. And we're all talking from personal opinion. And we're just going to go through basically what we have been doing in our past, what we see as present opportunities, and what can happen in the future. So could I start with you, Lee?
Can you hear me okay with this? Can you hear on this mic? Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so my name's Lee Brain. I work at Barclays in the investment bank, part of the CTO division. My background is primarily computer science many years ago, so degree and PhD in that. My specialism was in functional object-oriented programming, combining the two. In the past 25 years, since then, been working in banking, primarily investment banking, but also wealth management, some corporate banking, and years ago, some retail banking. So it's been a mix of technology, advanced technologies, and also a lot of banking. Now, within the last year or so, at Barclays Investment Bank, we've been involved, or I've been involved, looking at architecture and innovation. So from an architecture perspective, it's looking at technology standards, and there are about a few hundred of those in the bank. And then if we look at innovation, I've been focusing in the last year at blockchain, and specifically within that, looking at shared ledgers, meaning interbank ledgers, and also executable business logic. So smart agreements, smart contracts. That's my introduction.
Hi, my name's Ian Cusden. I'm from UBS. I'm working in the crypto lab over at level 39 that UBS has set up and been quite public about. My background, I started life actually as a mechanical engineer, quickly switched into software. I used to work with embedded system technology and now joined UBS, been with UBS for 13 years, always been a technologist. I work in our CTO function, so I'm a technical architect. The last few years I've been working in our R&D team, so I've touched on many technologies, and now my focus for the last year has been blockchain, and that's my specific role at the moment, is to lead the technology investigation.
Hello. Hi, my name's James Slazis, and prior to joining Consensus as a CFO and head of capital markets, I managed a derivative arbitrage book and structured products for a bank that used to be known as Lehman Brothers. And subsequently, I found myself looking for a new job and ended up running a hedge fund of life settlements and longevity risk. And things that we're doing at Consensus, along with our partners at Microsoft, we have created a simple use case of total return swap. And basically what it is to do is really more to have the banks really get to see lots of the different use cases of what can be done with the blockchain. So the swap basically takes you through all the different areas that we've been discussing at the conference. If you just imagine prior to entering into a trade, you're going to want to know who is, you have to go through a know your customer. And so we use the identity type of system. And from there, we, again, needing to know what kind of collateral is going to be needed to be held. So our reputation systems, things that are not to be in place today or even the next year or two, but really to give an idea of what is the future to look like. So upon entering a transaction where we can highlight obviously a T plus zero, where we're using smart contracts, as well as I believe Balance 3 has been mentioned several times with their triple entry accounting. The transaction becomes you do the trade plus your confirmation. So it goes out to all of the, you know, both counterparties as well as immortalized on the blockchain. And then what we do is basically allow for market fluctuation, having price changes and automatic collateral readjustments without having the back office be involved. And even employing, again, the reputation system for a counterparty to have a basically a default risk or a reduction in their reputation. And then, again, just summing up the transaction, again, through the triple entry. And all of this really just shows kind of different spots where the banks can really look to be able to experiment and figure out what other use cases are out there from using blockchain technology.
Hi, am I on? Can you hear me? Great. So I'm Rex. I guess before I introduce myself, I'm going to steal this line from Lee, because he actually said it just before we came on here. So I was here on the first day, and I've got to say, it's amazing to see how much enthusiasm you guys still have towards the end of the fifth day, which I think is a kind of a tribute to how powerful the conference is. So kind of well done, you guys. So to me, my background is computer science. I guess I should say what I do at SocGen. So I guess you could think of me as like the senior architect in London. I work in the investment bank. I head up UK architecture for the investment banking bit. So that's not the retail part of Société Générale, which is in France. So computer science was my degree. I spent about the first 10 years of my career building derivatives risk management systems. And the second half of my career has been in software and a bit of hardware architecture as well. So my day job, I spend an awful lot of time with fintechs. So being based in London, and London being one of the major hubs for fintech activity, we kind of take advantage of me being located here. So that means that there's a strong streak to innovation and collaboration for my job. And as part of that, I spend a lot of time thinking and working with other folk on BitTech. So things like blockchain. So that's my background.
And my name is Andrew Keyes. I'm a recovering banker. I used to work at UBS and built lots of products and distributed them specifically for insurance in longevity capital markets. And my view on the banking sector with respect to smart contracts is somewhat orthogonal to what we've been seeing in the consortium settings, where I believe that there's a standardization request, and I've thought that what we really need to do is give the banks access to tools so they can play with the technology, and rather than define standards, give them the ability to understand what this technology is, which is somewhat pursuant to what we're doing now with Microsoft, where we give this test bed for the banks to play. So with that said, where do you think the future could hold?
Indeed. So you're mentioning one particular avenue of experimentation.
Sure.
And indeed, so if we were looking at the multiple avenues, so we see actually the two cross-pollinating. Effectively, you have experimentation where you have Ethereum and other technologies that we can play with, we can experiment, we can explore the functional, the non-functional behaviors. But in parallel with that, we also need to do a structured design method. So architecture, design, engineer that. So this is a common theme that we've been hearing over the last maybe 6 months or so. So we need to interplay the two of these and learn from each other. And I think one of the things we found in the last few months is the speed at which certain technologies have matured. So if we look, say, 6-9 months ago, when we were looking at some of the experimental technologies, and they would kind of fail at the first hurdle. And if we're assessing scalability, performance, data privacy, etc. And it's encouraging to see, as the months go by, and this is incredibly fast, that startups are already pivoting, making adjustments to their propositions and the technologies in order to come back with things that are more suitable for banking. And I'll give one example for this. So data privacy is key. If we look about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, everyone was saying, well, it all needs to be completely transparent and public. Then there's a bit of a shift in saying, well, actually, we can do some encryption as well and model items within that. Okay. Take it a next step further. Maybe actually you don't want just one chain. Maybe you need multiple chains and then the different chains so you can partition data. So you're actually then starting to get inside the heads of the architects within investment banks when they say as the first step, will it allow us to do A, B, C, D? So in the past, it used to be fail, fail, fail. And it was like, fail, pass, and it's nearly getting there now. So it's quite inspiring, as we were saying, to actually see that progressing.
I mean, yes, I mean, UBS, we've been very vocal about the experiments we've been doing. So yes, we definitely see the value in experimentation. Sorry. We definitely see the value in experimentation. You know, we demoed the smart bond experiment, where we tried to model the life cycle of security. Just, you know, that's proved to be very useful and as an educational tool and also to stimulate conversation inside the bank. We find, you know, to align, you know, we found that, you know, experimentation allows us to discover, you know, areas where we need to focus and, you know, and that's when we'll issue the challenges out to the community to help, you know, find those solutions, you know, enable scale, enable transparency and privacy, the right balance of those things. There will need to be ultimately a need for standards, but we want those to be open. We want those to open access and you know flatten the current structures we have today. So you know I think you know, but both we need both sides of the story.
Yeah, I agree, and where we. From our different enterprise banking clients, seems like it goes the same way where we have, the bank is requesting, we want some kind of use case that we want to work with, and it may not even be a case that they're going to then implement through it, but it seems like it's giving them much more of an education of how to utilize this type of technology. So, and I think kind of just the natural flow will be use case with internal in the bank, as well as then growing that from that type of private blockchain to more of a consortium blockchain, and then grabbing partners so that they can match up.
I think we're validating each other's, and consortia are a good way to do that validation as well. We see it's not something we can for want of a better term win on our own. You know, we need participation. That involves us as banks, but also the community at large, the fintechs, the startups.
I guess a lot of the thinking in the last couple of months for SocGen has been around, what value internally could we generate by making use of blockchain, and so that's kind of figuring out, okay, so what's the state of the art, and as these guys have already been saying, that frontier of knowledge is moving on so fast, and that was kind of evident from a lot of what's been talked about at this kind of conference. So just understanding where are we now, where are we going to be projecting ourselves, and then kind of playing a mating game, which is what are the internal use cases that we've got, where do we see that we've got inefficiencies that we can manage to eradicate, how can we create value internally and to our clients from the technology, and it's just kind of been trying to figure that out. I think the DLG consortia, which kind of happened, 3, 4, 5 months ago now, was kind of really a recognition that most organisations figured out that an obvious thing that an obvious ambition that we have is simplification and acceleration of the back offices that we've got. So we've got a similar set of financial products, we've got a similar set of processing challenges and cost overhead associated with that. And the promise is to be able to make use of blockchain technology for the benefit of ourselves, our clients, and also for the public in the form of greater transparency, greater predictability, greater proof via construction of correct running. You know, this is the ambition that we have. And the consortium moment was kind of saying, well, actually, if we're going to achieve that, no one can do it on their own. Because you kind of know that there's no point having a chain if no one's on your chain, okay? You've got to be able to figure out how to move a significant proportion of the industry forward for enough products to be able to get like an economy of scale effect. So in the last couple of months, it's really been realizing, actually, let's come together and figure out how we can manage to have a significant number of the financial participants take a step together. And that kind of means figuring out, A, what can we do with the technology now? B, where is there white space? Do we see that there are smart folk out there who are looking to occupy that, to figure out how to be able to build techniques around scalability or privacy, as Lee was talking about? Or alternatively, should we as the financial services offer out a rallying cry to the smart folk to kind of say, hey, we need a solution here. It's going to be of benefit broadly if we can figure out how to do this and start maybe putting a spotlight on some of the areas where we think if we could answer these problems before maybe these problems, it would unlock a pathway for us to be able to deploy the technology quicker and faster.
So when does the rubber meet the road? And do you have any concepts that are relatively low-hanging fruit? I see lots of use cases, and I'm interested in, and it's not really a timeline, but more of what are the bottlenecks from when we have proof of concepts into real life using the blockchain?
Sure. So most banks have listed their use cases for blockchain. They've taken a view of business priorities against them, together with the technical debt within the bank, meaning how much effort would it take to get off current systems and migrate to this new system. There's also the business benefit. Each bank has its own products where it has a strategic focus, looks to increase revenue, etc. But one of the things that applies across all the banks is this idea of the cost reduction. So all investment banks are under pressure to reduce costs. If you're looking from an ops and tech perspective, there are clear targets against the banks that are expressed publicly. And we view innovation could be applied to reduce cost. That idea helps you then focus your priority list for what are your use cases. So I put in the middle layer the reducing cost. Above that would be regulatory. So imagine if there's a regulatory use case, something that's coming up in the next few years, a new requirement, and a solution to that could involve a shared ledger to help you get there. Then you'd be able to get additional business sponsorship. There would kind of be a win-win for everybody. Also, potentially an equivalent of sponsorship from the regulator to encourage that. So I'll put mandatory regulatory at the top, cost saving in the middle, and then business growth below that from an investment bank perspective. Also, you need to bear in mind, you're saying, in terms of roadmaps. So there are large incumbents that perform excellent roles at the moment, stable, reliable. So if you think of the major incumbents, whether you're looking across FX settlement, securities settlement, the list goes on and on. They have a valuable role, and over the longer term, there may be opportunities to optimize that processing. But what I just wanted to highlight, and this is really throwing it out to the community to come back with a solution. A lot of the smart contracts you see that are posed on the board are designed to be solved on something like Ethereum. Bear in mind, when you move to models where you've got, for example, securities settlements, you've got FX settlement, you've got netting processes, there are things that are a lot harder than very small smart contracts. Things are pulled together into a netting pool quite often. The netting isn't just adding up your credits and debits as a sum. Much more complicated. You need to try lots of different combinations to get a high settlement efficiency. So how do you do that? Currently, what you do is you stop time. You take a snapshot, and then you perform an optimization. And at the end, you release that back and inform all the banks what has changed. quite a few incumbents ask you to transfer more money than you think you need to perform your settlement as a wire. And then at the end of that, they transfer the leftover back to you. Those sorts of challenges need to be incorporated into smart contracts in some way. And that's very hard. I think it requires not just banking, fintech, I think it requires academia as well. So one of the things we're looking to do next year is the banks, together with academia, for example, the Alan Turing Institute in the UK, is shape some of these really tough challenges. We're not looking to solve the technology for it. We can pose the problem and then expose it and look for academics to work together with fintech. And I think at that point, when we've got securities settlement with netting, then we know it's come of age. So I put that later down the roadmap.
I can completely agree with what Leah's been saying there. We want to improve our operational efficiency and reduce our costs, and these kind of technologies, there is great potential there to do that. If we can have a single authoritative record, then that would be a good thing for the organisations. If we can distribute trust, I think that's a great concept. I mean, for us, one of the key challenges that is the identity. Know your customer, and AML, etc. Those are big key challenges that we have to meet. And we all do the same process. So to me that represents a great opportunity. So I think there's a lot of great minds in this room and in the community at large. And I think it's a problem that can be solved. And that's what we'd be looking to do. We've been very public about the kinds of areas that we're looking at. Settlement is a great use case. And again, an area where we can achieve economies of scale, our focus is always though is obviously on the client. So everything that we want to do as organisations is around our clients. So the things that are beneficial to them are great. So the ease of access of this technology as well is important.
Well, I'm actually curious on the cost of the settlement. When we look at the different banks we've looked with, it's been more emerging markets, developing areas have seen ways where they could implement this technology easier, just because here in the UK and the US and things like that, where there's very strong systems in place, they may not be as efficient. So it seems like it's going to take a longer time for that type of cost reduction, whereas I think a KYC type of idea where that can start to be spread throughout the bank and bringing on customers might be an easier way. I'm just curious on how you address the settlement side of things, because it would be such a big change.
So I just add one note. So I was picking the hardest case,
gotcha.
Security settlement. If you're going to pick an easier one, I'll go for something that's asset registry based. So for example, if you're looking at a particular physical commodity that's allocated, that may be easier.
For me, the settlement piece is around that. If we're going to issue other kinds of assets onto a chain, then we really need to be able to settle on the same fabric. If we have to settle on a separate fabric, then that creates extra complexity that we don't necessarily need. So I think you can draw some. I think the importance of being able to do DVP on chain rather than a deliver, immobilize an asset on a chain and then have to do a payment off chain in a traditional system.
So I knew that KYC was going to come up before they kind of got to me. So just to kind of jive on what Lee said. So probably one of the first kind of base camp for us in a broad adoption of the technology is going to be trying to figure out how to do some kind of shared know your customer kind of control process. So You know, we are obligated by regulations to go through control processes to figure out that we are selling our financial products to the right kind of folk. Every single market player has to follow those kind of controls, and it is a woeful situation that we can't manage to figure out how to do something together. But the problem is we don't know how to be able to have to associate a thing to a digital identity, to be able to be sure of the entity that we're talking about. And so whilst this isn't a use case for us to think about in terms of, well, this is one of our financial products, but you want to get the banks on board, figure out how to help us with KYC and anti-money laundering controls, because everyone has to do it. It's a burden for everybody. It just increases the cost base that we have. And we've got to figure these things out before we can manage to do things at scale. So, as Lee was saying, it's a challenge. Help us figure out how to do that kind of stuff.
So, with or without blockchain technology, I was just curious to know what your thoughts of the future customer of a bank, because I think that there's a generational gap between the 10-year-olds, the 20-year-olds versus the 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds, and how will that affect strategic initiatives?
Well, I think ideally you'd be talking to retail banking, not investment banking, on that point. However, if we were to look, for example, within investment banking, by customers, so if we take technology as a part of the bank and the business as another part, so there's a customer relationship there. So technology is delivering value to the business. What type of technology, how does that change over time? So we already have the position where new graduates join, they have certain expectations around the development processes. And this isn't just the work environment, it's how long does it take to get something live? What's the nature of the work environment? How quick and agile are we? So from that point of view, you need a transformation within technology as a starting point. So things like DevOps processes, automated testing, standardized, disciplined agile as a methodology. Now, it may sound quite process-oriented and not that much to do with smart contracts, but actually, unless the banks move to that model, and they're partway down the road, all these new technologies are going to take 10 years before they actually get implemented. So we need to move to this new model. So different parts of the bank move at different paces. We've already got parts of many investment banks that are already highly agile, and what we need to do is to expand that to the rest of technology and have the business working with technology. So in terms of the customer's expectations, I would say, first of all, there's the employee's expectations, and then them becoming faster and more agile and reflecting faster pace of change will enable us to deliver different products. The millennials aspect and so on, I don't think applies so much to institutional investors who are participants in investment banking. There may be cases, for example, if people are looking to swap assets and they would like to do it on their iPad outside of their trading desk, but I haven't been aware of that demand yet. So.
To agree with what Lee's saying, I suppose it's a slightly different problem in some of the more investment banking and asset management fields. For retail, I think the one challenge I'd throw out there is today you do need to understand the technology. You do need to be aware of where the problems. Lose your private key and you've lost the asset that's tied to that. So I think again it's an opportunity for the banks and the community to provide systems to enable people to carry out transactions on these platforms in a secure way with some level of guarantee that should something go wrong that they have recourse. Obviously, we're not suggesting that we want to completely control these things, but we need to provide enablers. I talked about it before. It's distribution of trust. So, But there's still, you know, there is a need to still provide some of the key services that we do today to clients.
Well, thank you very much, Ian. We have time for one question.
So the question was, what's the minimum transaction volume? So I think it depends how you're partitioning your system and which use cases. So there's mention of a blockchain, but the reality is there are going to be many chains within that. For if you look at classical distributed databases and assume a similar approach is taken, then you can imagine these being partitioned. So you can look at low volume areas, high volume. I wouldn't expect it to be used for high frequency trading. Inappropriate for many years to come. However, if we're looking at, you can look at securities settlement where they may be taking 100,000 transactions in a batch, pumping through in a 15-minute period. You may look, I don't actually think that's the challenge here. I think there are different challenges rather than just that, because I've seen those being solved, and I've seen people running Ethereum and other smart contracts, and they're showing really high transaction throughputs, and we've run this on some nodes. I think there's a different challenge, and it actually relates, well, given the company here, it relates to the consensus, and it's the granularity of consensus that you're applying to it. So I think one of the computer science problems is taking the granularity that you've got from a bank's perspective, which is the agreement. Remember, it's an executable agreement, the business logic. So what consensus, if I gave you an agreement, what consensus would you need? The parties that are party to that agreement. Whereas what you're looking here is, the next step is how many parties need to agree to process a bunch of transactions. So there's a little bit of a mapping change as it goes down. The old model is you have a central clearinghouse that will process it. Easy, one person with that, you delegate it. So the scalability here, I don't think it's the number of transactions. I think it's how to work out the model that encapsulates that idea that the consensus is at the agreement, and then work out what do you need to do underneath. And maybe, you know, if we said what's the combinatorial explosion of every combination of different parties and say create a chain for every single one, does that scalability make sense? So I think that would be a better dimension of scalability to worry about and then work out how to address. Does that make sense?
Thank you all for your time.